It is not generally known what has been discovered by men who are the most eminent for their learning, in consequence of their assiduous observations of the heavens, that the fires which fall upon the earth, and receive the name of thunderbolts, fulminum nomen habent, proceed from the three superior stars, Sidereum, but principally from the one which is situated in the middle. And hence it is commonly said, the thunderbolts are darted by Jupiter. Pliny knew the origin of lightning in the friction of clouds. He wrote that by the dashing of two clouds, the lightning may flash out. He did not confuse lightning with the thunderbolt that is discharged by the planets. He makes a distinction between earthly bolts, not from stars, and the bolts from the stars. Pliny knew that the earth is one of the planets. Human beings are distributed all around the earth and stand with their feet pointing towards each other. Another marvel, that the earth herself hangs suspended and does not fall and carry us with it. The planet god Jupiter was frequently shown with a thunderbolt in his hand. The electrical discharge coming from Jupiter is described in many ancient texts. In the Orphic hymn to Jupiter the Thunderer, he is described as he who shaxed with fiery light the world. From thee proceeds ethereal lightning's blaze, flashing around intolerable rays. Horrid, untamed, thou rollest thy flames along. Rapid, ethereal bolt, descending fire, the earth trembles. The earth does not quake when struck by regular lightnings. The bolt of Jupiter falls from the azure sky, not veiled by clouds. The electrical discharge from a planet is described very clearly by Pliny. Heavenly fire is spit forth by the planet as a crackling charcoal flies from a burning log. It is accompanied by a very great disturbance of the air, produced by the birth pangs, so to speak, of the planet in travail. Also Seneca discerns between the lesser bolts which seek houses and undeserving homes and the bolts of the planet Jupiter by which the threefold mass of mountains fell. In the Babylonian epic, the Enuma-Elish, it is told how Marduk, or the planet Jupiter, raised the thunderbolt, his mighty weapon. He mounted the chariot, the storm unequaled for terror. With overpowering brightness his head was crowned. He is also described as the planet god at whose battle heaven quaked, at whose wrath the deep is troubled. In the bright firmament his course is supreme. With the evil wind his weapons blaze forth, with his flame steep mountains are destroyed. A hymn to Marduk tells that by his warfare the heaven resounds, before his anger the deep is shaken, before his sharp weapon the gods draw back. The Egyptian pharaoh Siti described Amun as a circling star which scatters its seed in fire, like a flame of fire, irresistible in heaven and in earth. Brihaspati, or the planet Jupiter in Hindu astronomy, is invoked in the Rig Veda as one who in destroying enemies cleaves apart their cities. Brihaspati strikes the enemy with his thunderbolts. Shiva is called wielder of the thunderbolt. In Worlds in Collision, the overpowering of one planet by another in conjunctions was quoted from the Hindu astronomical books. The electrical power which manifests itself in conjunctions is called Bala. Jupiter as the strongest planet is Ablin. Where a planetary bolt struck the ground, we recognize in the change in Jupiter's motion the cause of great catastrophes in the solar system which affected also the Earth in the age of the patriarchs, or at the close of the Old Kingdom. In that period Jupiter became the supreme deity, having removed Saturn from its orbit. Classical historians, speaking of the destruction of the cities of the plain, told of fire from the sky. Tacitus narrated that the catastrophe of Sodom and Gomorrah was caused by a thunderbolt. The plain was consumed by lightning, and he added, "Personally, I am quite prepared to grant that once famous cities may have been burnt by fire from heaven." Also, Josephus asserted that the cities had been consumed by thunderbolts. Philo wrote that lightnings poured out of heaven, destroying the cities. Since the time of Abraham was the period of Jupiter's domination that followed Saturn's and preceded that of Venus, we are led to the surmise that the thunderbolts which destroyed the plain with its cities originated from Jupiter, or from a magnetosphere ionosphere overcharged by the nearby presence of the giant planet. Even today discharges leap between Jupiter and Io, one of its satellites. The charging of the Earth's atmosphere in the presence of Jupiter's huge magnetosphere prepared the way for a discharge. A planetary bolt struck the ground in the valley of Sittim. For a long time I thought that the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah and other cities of the plain resulted from an interplanetary discharge caused by Jupiter. Classical historians speaking of this event told of fire from the sky. The period was that of Jupiter's era of domination that followed that of Saturn and preceded that of Venus, and reference to the king and high priest Melchizedek. My king is Zidk, Zidk's being the usual name of the planet Jupiter, in the days of the patriarch Abraham and the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, seem to support my interpretation of the agent of the catastrophe. This very catastrophe caused the origin of the Dead Sea and also of the entire African rift that extends from north of the River Jordan all the way through two-thirds of the length of Africa. But, reading in 1960 of a reference to Professor Agreste, a Russian astronomer who thought that an atomic explosion had taken place, I saw some alluring points in it. If, as Professor Agreste seems to assume, the three angels were extraterrestrial beings that followed Abraham from Ur to Sodom and placed a time device in Sodom, the warning to Lot and his family to leave the place and not to turn their faces to the city they soon would flee, finds some parallels in the atomic age. The observers of the first atomic explosion at Alamogordo, New Mexico were told, as was Lot and his family, not to look at the fission, but the wife of Lot looked, she may have been blinded, in the legend she turned into a pillar of salt. At Alamogordo the observers were impressed, actually overwhelmed, by the tremendous light effect, even with their eyes closed. Next rose a pillar of smoke as if from a furnace, Genesis 19, 28, Abraham looked towards Sodom and Gomorrah, and towards all the land of the plain, and beheld, and, lo, the smoke of the country went up as the smoke of the furnace. If the time of the event is asked to be determined, I would strongly question the implication that extraterrestrial visitors came to earth as late as the end of the Old Kingdom of Egypt. For this is the time to which the age of the patriarch Abraham belongs, and on this I would expand somewhere else. Yet we are left with my original idea that goes back to the early 40s, that the agent of the destruction was a bolt from Jupiter, or from the magnetosphere ionosphere, overcharged by the nearby presence of the giant planet. The origin of nitrate deposits. The Dead Sea, for many centuries proclaimed to be dead and capable of yielding nothing, is today one of the greatest reservoirs of natural nitrate under exploitation in the world, competing with the deposits of Chile. The deposits of nitrate in Chile are found in a narrow strip over 1,400 miles in length, in the Great Desert in the northern part of the country. The origin of the nitrates is a problem that has not been solved. This is a moot question on which no two geologists agree. One theory is that in prehistoric times the entire nitrate zone was a part of the Pacific Ocean, and that through volcanic disturbances that portion of the sea was cut off and the water evaporated by a very slow process. Fish skeletons found in the Kalish furnish good proof of this assertion, as does the fact that the Pacific coast is rising gradually. This theory is, however, contradicted by the fact that no bromine exists there, a substance naturally looked for in deposits thus formed. Another theory attributes the origin of the Kalish to an electrical process. A passage of an electric spark through the moist air produces a combination of nitrogen and oxygen resulting in nitric acid. Electrical storms, a frequent occurrence in the Andes, may have acted in this way and formed great quantities of nitric acid. But thunderstorms occur in many other places all over the world, near and far from the sea, and yet there are no deposits of nitrates in these places. A later theory maintains that the deposits are an accumulation of land drainage brought down through ages from the highlands along the coast. But how was it formed in the highlands of Chile? Others explain the formation as the work of microbes, or as the result of the action of volcanoes discharging through their craters ammonia-charged steam there condensed. But deposits of nitrates are not formed in other volcanic regions. No explanation satisfied the chemists and geologists, and therefore new ideas were constantly launched. In the laboratory, a very efficient method of building oxides of nitrates is applied, passing air through a powerful electric arc, in which the nitrogen and oxygen of the air combine chemically to form oxides of nitrogen. Nature is a great laboratory too. The Dead Sea region was the scene of an interplanetary electrical discharge when a powerful electrical spark leapt down from above or sprang up from the Earth. A similar event created the chilling deposits of nitrates, and the recollections of the Incas of Peru preserved the memory of this grandiose discharge. Fire came down from heaven and destroyed a great part of the people, while those who were taking to flight were turned into stones. The transmutation of oxygen into sulfur. In the building of saltpeter, or potassium nitrate, the nitrogen of the air took a major part. How was the oxygen of the atmosphere affected by the interplanetary discharges? It has been observed since ancient times that lightnings are attended by an odor of sulfur. In the 12th book of the Odyssey, Homer says, Zeus thundered and hurled his bolt upon the ship, and she quivered from stem to stern, smitten by the bolt of Zeus, and was filled with sulfurous smoke. Again, in the Iliad, when beneath the blast of further Zeus an oak falleth uprooted, and a dread reek of brimstone ariseth therefrom, then verily courage no longer possesseth him that looketh thereon. And, Zeus, thundered horribly and let loose the shimmering lightning and dashed it to the ground in front of the horses of Diomedes, and a ghastly blaze of flaming sulfur shot up, and the horses, terrified, both cringed away against the chariot. The same observation is put into a scientific prose by Pliny: lightning and thunder are attended with a strong smell of sulfur, and the light produced by them is of a sulfurous complexion. The second part of Pliny's sentence is also correct. Pioneer work on electrical discharges in modern times was produced using globes of sulfur in rotation. Sulfur is one of the best insulators, and static electricity, when accumulated on it, discharges in electrical sparks toward objects brought close to it. Electrical discharges produced without the help of sulfur are also accompanied by the smell of it. This odor was referred to by Benjamin Franklin, who, comparing lightning and electricity, wrote to the Royal Society in London that both phenomena are attended by a sulfurous smell. This he mentioned among 12 other properties which suggested that lightning is an electrical discharge. No importance was attributed by him or by anyone else since to this sulfurous smell. The smell of ozone is different from the smell of vaporized sulfur or sulfurous compounds, and the supposition that the ancients were unable to distinguish between the two disregards the fact that besides the smell of ozone, a sulfurous smell follows an electric discharge. This suggests to me that sulfur is actually produced from the air by the passage of an electrical discharge. The quantity of sulfur must be detectable in a careful laboratory experiment. Quite possibly the detection of sulfur produced by a strong electrical discharge, by means other than smell, has already been fulfilled. A very strong discharge of electricity passing through the air formed solid sulfur. The bolt of electricity that fell upon the plain of the Pentapolis was of a magnitude sufficient to cause a transmutation of elements on a great scale. It rained brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven. The overturned plain became full of sulfurous deposits, the whole land thereof is brimstone, and salt, probably potash, and burning. And when later in another great upheaval the plain became covered by the Dead Sea, sulfurous springs continued to flow into the valley of the Jordan and into the Dead Sea from submerged strata and from the springs on the shores. At the end of the 8th century and the beginning of the 7th century before the present era, when every 15 years Mars was approaching dangerously close to the Earth, Isaiah prophesied the day of the Lord's vengeance, in which day the streams of Iduma shall be turned into pitch, and the dust thereof into brimstone, and the land thereof shall become burning pitch. A curse upon man and his land was that brimstone shall be scattered upon his habitation. Upon the wicked he shall rain pitch, fire and brimstone, and a horrible tempest. This eschatological vision was alive with Ezekiel in the days of the Babylonian exile. He spoke about an overflowing rain, and great hailstones, meteorites, fire and brimstone. These stories of sulfur raining from the sky and the fearful expectations built upon them could be taken as fictions of an imaginative mind. Were not the smell of sulfur an indication of its presence in the air following the passage of a discharge, and were not also the presence of sulfur deposits around the Dead Sea, thrust in deep below the ocean level, a substantiation of the story of the cataclysm. Is the atomic source of sulfur generated by a discharge in oxygen, or does the nitrogen of the air participate also in the building of sulfur? It seems more probable that two atoms of oxygen are smashed into one atom of sulfur. If the atomic weight of sulfur obtained by electrical discharge will be found to be more than 32, that of sulfur is 32.06, it might be due to the presence of some atoms of oxygen of the atomic weight 17. This heavy oxygen is the product of a nitrogen atom transmuted by the bombardment of alpha particles. We must reckon with the possibility that a proton from broken atoms of oxygen or ozone or nitrogen enters the new combination, or that electrons which caused the perturbation are able by themselves to change the atomic weight of the elements. Jupiter, gold, and the birth of Athens. Pindar, speaking of the island of Rhodes, says that Zeus rained down on the city with golden flakes of snow at the time Athens was born from Zeus' head, shouting with a far-ringing cry, and all heaven and Mother Earth shuddered before her. Homer also says that upon them, the people of Rhodes, wondrous wealth was shed by the son of Cronus. Strabo, after quoting Homer, adds that other writers say that gold rained on the island the time when Athena was born from the head of Zeus, as Pindar states. Gold-bearing gravel, with ingots in it, originated from outside of the earth and, if we should look upon the Greek legend of Zeus and the golden rain in Rhodes as containing revealing elements, then the ingots came from Jupiter. It could be meteoric gold, and as to the origin the ancients could err, but the event happened in human memory, actually during the early Bronze Age, or at its end. In 1866 a human skull was unearthed in the interior of Bald Mountain near Alderville, in Calaveras County, California. The skull of Bald Mountain was reported to have been found in the shaft of a gold mine, in a layer of auriferous, gold-bearing, gravel, beneath four layers of lava, each separated from the other by four layers of gravel. The skull did not differ in structure or dimensions from the skull of modern man, however, it was fossilized. In the gold-bearing gravel of Calaveras were also unearthed fossilized bones of the mammoth, the great mastodon, the tapir, horse, hippopotamus, rhinoceros and camel, all extinct animals in pre-Columbian America. But geologically the layer in which it was found belongs to the tertiary, and therefore a great embarrassment was in store for the geologists and evolutionists. They divide the strata according to the fossils found in them and hold that in the tertiary there could have been no human beings, for it is an age before the advent of man. But we have seen in the case of the Dead Sea that the great upheavals ascribed to the end of the tertiary took place at a much later time, actually in the time of the patriarchs, which is the end of the early Bronze Age period. The auriferous gravels of California and of the Ural Mountains had their origin at this same time. The reign of gold on Rhodes is assigned by Pindar to the time when Athens was born from the head of Zeus. The expulsion of the protoplanet Venus from the body of Jupiter followed, by decades or by centuries, the contact of Saturn and re-Jupiter, and the fantasy of the peoples regarded Venus as a child of Jupiter, conceived to him by Saturn. The ancient Persians called Venus Tishtria, a magnificent and glorious star which Ahuramazda, that is, Jupiter, has established as master and overseer of all the stars. Plutarch described the events in the following terms, then Horomaz is, Ahuramazda, having magnified himself to three times his size, removed himself as far from the sun as the sun is distant from the earth. And one star, Sirius, that is, Tishtria, or Venus, he established above all others as a guardian and watcher.